You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
A happy Wednesday to you. Arkansas basketball back in action tonight down in Austin, Texas against the Longhorns. It's going to be an 8 o'clock tip-off tonight for that game between a couple of teams that are in need of a win to help their NCAA tournament resume. Texas playing well here of late. They've won 3 of 4. Arkansas, obviously, with that win over Kentucky the other day, trying to creep back into the March conversation. Anthony Christensen is in Austin, and he joins us now. Anthony, I know you got in late last night, but have you been able to kind of get a temperature of the mood there in town?
I haven't really been out in the town just yet. I tried to sleep in a little bit this morning just because I've been driving a lot lately, because I drove to Lexington and back, and then yesterday I drove down here. So that's a lot of a lot of mileage. So I'm still kind of recovering from that. But no, I mean, it seems like Texas is kind of right there on the verge of kind of not cementing itself as a tournament team per se, but is certainly in that conversation of being, you know, on the bubble or on the right side of the bubble, if that makes sense. So it's a team that obviously is coming in with, like you said, 3 wins in 4 games. And some of those games are big wins. I mean, Missouri and Texas A&M, yeah, they're both at home, but those are big wins against two really good teams. And then a 31-point win on the road at LSU isn't anything to scoff at either, even though LSU hasn't exactly been the best team in the league this season.
What do you think? But, Go ahead. Keep going.
Oh, no. I was just going to kind of just keep on just talking about, like, Trey Johnson. I mean, he's one of the best freshmen in the country. You know, my personal favorite player in the country to watch, and I think I'm the only person in the out there with that belief, is Julian Larry. He kind of comes off the bench for Texas, but he's so fun to watch. I covered in the Missouri Valley last year. Like, I was courtside for a lot of those games, and he was playing for that really good Indiana State team, and he's a ton of fun. And then obviously you got the Tremont Mark factor as well, obviously having played at Arkansas last season. So there's a lot to like about this Texas team. They've been a little bit inconsistent throughout SEC play, but you know, they've really started to put it together lately, and yeah, they've really played well of late.
Yeah, you wonder about the Kentucky game, and you wonder about Kentucky period after what happened to them last night against Ole Miss. They ended up losing by 14, but I think they were down by a bunch in that game, close to 30 points. So you wonder, you know, how good is the win at Kentucky? It's not to discount at all the fact that Arkansas went there and won at Rupp, but you know, I think it does maybe make you revisit how big of a win that was. Arkansas needed a win. It was great for them to get a win, but maybe it makes you revisit how quality of a win, I guess, maybe it was.
Yeah, maybe. I never try to scoff at wins, especially wins on the road, especially in a league, you know, as deep and as talented as the SEC is this season. But, you know, Kentucky obviously struggled in the game against Ole Miss. Didn't really get to watch a ton of it just because I was driving. But yeah, I was keeping tabs on it. You know, Hank, our photographer, was in the passenger seat giving me updates. So we were keeping up with it, and you know, that and other big games around the country. So, you know, you don't want to scoff at a road win, especially with you see the highs that Kentucky's had this season, you know, beating Duke, beating Gonzaga, even though maybe that Gonzaga win doesn't look as good as it did in that moment. But I mean, that's a Kentucky team that can still go out and compete with anybody, beat Florida, you know, went into a shootout with Alabama as well. So I still think that's a good win. You know, any road win is a good win in my eyes. Like, even you look at South Carolina on the road, they've taken, you know, Auburn to the buzzer, Florida to the buzzer. Mm-hmm. So I'll never scoff at a road win in the SEC, especially this season. So I wouldn't necessarily say that's, you know, aged poorly or anything like that, just because, I mean, it's still very not that far in the rear view, and B, it's a road win in the SEC against a top 25 team. So that's, yeah, I don't know.
I think what has become clear about Kentucky, though, is that they don't play defense.
And they missed Mont Butler and Kirk Creason.
What's that?
And they missed Lamont Butler and Kerr Creasa as
Yeah,
well.
I think so. But even when they had Lamont Butler in the you know, on the floor, they weren't playing great defense. You think about the Tennessee game last week. Tennessee really bad offensively. You know, Arkansas hadn't been very good offensively either, and Kentucky was. I guess we'll see. You know, like was Kentucky, was that a turning point, or was that just a byproduct of playing Kentucky's defense? I gave up 98 points last night to Ole Miss. I think I read where it was the most points Ole Miss has ever scored against Kentucky in the history of that series. And, you know, Chris Beard's teams aren't exactly known as offensive juggernauts. And so, but moving on, I guess where I was going with this is, what does Texas do defensively that might be different than what Arkansas or saw last Saturday night in Lexington?
Yeah, Kentucky, or excuse me, Ark or jeez, Texas. Yeah, Texas, you know, is a pretty well-rounded defense, top 40 in KenPom's defensive efficiency. They can kind of make you hold the ball, take it late into the shot clock. I mean, Rodney Terry's kind of always been, you know, a defensive coach who, you know, doesn't give up a ton of good looks. They're a decent three-point defense, not the best. But I think, you know, where they kind of it is kind of the shot clock. Kind of making teams, forcing teams into bad shots, if that makes sense. You know, the teams will, you know, go late into the shot clock against Texas and, you know, not necessarily shoot the best. You know, their 2-point defense is really good, top 30 in the country. So, you know, Arkansas is obviously a team that really likes to drive into the paint. You look at a Duke Hero, DJ Wagner, those guys, even John L. Davis, the last couple of games has been driving more. So that's something Texas has defended pretty well throughout the season. 3-point defense isn't the best, so maybe you see Arkansas, you know, having the 3-point shooting night it did against Kentucky. Obviously, Kentucky's defense, as you mentioned, and as has kind of been a theme throughout the season, isn't necessarily the best. So maybe that's something that, you know, Arkansas can maybe take advantage of if it can continue to find that form, if that makes sense. But yeah, I think the 3-point shooting is kind of where you want to see it in conference play. Like I talked about Texas's 2-point defense earlier, it hasn't been as potent, you know, in SEC games. So that's something that maybe they can take advantage of if you know things go their way. But Texas is a team that tries to force you into bad shots, late shots in the shot clock. So that's something that I'm kind of looking at defensively to kind of, I guess, view with this Texas team. And, you know, they've got some good on-ball defenders. Like I mentioned, Julian Larry earlier, he's a good on-ball defender. Trey Johnson is active. You got a guy like Jason Kent, who's a decent defender and stuff along those lines. They don't foul a ton either, so that's an interesting one. But yeah, it'll be an interesting game from that perspective, if that makes sense.
Have you watched the game at the Moody Center? Like, I know you haven't been there in person, but have you watched games on TV this year?
Oh, yeah.
It's a unique place. It's unlike any other college basketball arena that I think exists. Basically, instead of an upper deck, they just have like giant screens where they've got, you know, advertising. I mean, it's like, think about a ribbon board that goes around an arena, and then maybe think about, you know, I don't know, one of these TV screens that's in an arena, and then you put like three of those together, and that's what they've got. This is unlike any type. This is a really unique setting. It's totally different than when Arkansas, you know, played down there previously at the old Irwin Center. This is, I wonder what the preparation is like to play in this type of arena, because again, it's unlike anything that I've ever seen in a college arena before.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I like you said, it's kind of a unique setup, so it'll be interesting to, you know, get in there and see the way they've got it set up. But yeah, the preparation, I'm sure, I mean, it's a late tip, so I'm sure they got a good shoot around either this morning or gonna have it later on, just to kind of get used to, you know, playing in the arena, shooting in the arena and everything along those lines. So that'll be, I guess, the main thing you look at from a preparation standpoint. But I'm excited about it. It's an interesting arena. I'm not sure, you know, what the atmosphere is going to be like. I'm not imagining it's going to be the same as it was at Rupp or anything like that. But, you know, it should be fun. I mean, Texas, like we mentioned, is a team that's in good form and has won, you know, a lot of games lately. So maybe people are excited about that and come out, but I mean, it's still an Arkansas team that is 2 wins in SEC play that's still trying to find itself and trying to, find a way to get back into that tournament picture, to get back into that conversation even. So it'll be an interesting environment probably, and I'm excited to see, the Moody Center just because it is kind of a unique setup. So it'll be interesting. I think it'll be, I counted it last night. I think this is going to be my 37th unique arena I've covered a game in. So that'll be fun.
The first time and the last time that Arkansas was down there was for a scrimmage about 3 years ago. It was the first basketball game of any kind they had at the Moody Center, and that was when Beard was coaching Texas and Musselman was coaching Arkansas. And so that wasn't on TV. I don't know how many people were in there in the arena that day. It was in the middle of football season, so this is really, I think, going to be the first time for a lot of Razorback fans who, maybe they just watch the Razorbacks and they're not a bigger, college basketball at large fan, that they'll be able to get a chance to see this arena. Again, it's unlike anything. It reminds me a little bit, Anthony, of the where do the Warriors play out in San Francisco? It's very technologically advanced. It kind of has that feel on a college scale.
Yeah, no, I can't remember the name of the arena off the top of
I
my
should
head,
know,
but
Arkansas played out there a couple of years ago in the NCAA tournament. But anyway, if you saw that, maybe that kind of gives you a little bit of an idea of what they're going into here in Austin. You think McConaughey will be there tonight?
I hope so, because if he is, I'll get to thank him for his masterful performance in Interstellar. So you would hope, but I
First,
think he's more of a football guy, right?
well, he
So.
was at a women's basketball game there, I don't know, a couple of weeks back. They had a big women's game, and they kept showing him after, every made Texas basket. So I don't know if he'll be there or not. First
Let's hope
time
he.
that I covered a game at Lloyd Noble Center in Norman, they sat me next to Toby Keith. He was sitting on the media row. Media row was basically kind of also like their VIP section. And so that was kind of a unique experience.
Did you tell him that you're a big fan of
I
his
didn't
music?
talk to him. No, I didn't. And when I say I sat next to him, they were really close together. He was actually directly in front of me, but I didn't want to. And I'm not that big of a fan, by the way. I like country music. I like some of his stuff, but I think by then I was kind of falling out of favor. Getting back to basketball here, Nellie Davis, what do you think? How does he build upon these last three performances that he's had? He's averaging 15 over the last three games. This is starting to look like the type of player that Arkansas thought they were going to get.
Yeah, I think it comes down to him being in more of a ball dominant role, right? And I know Mark Pope had talked about it post game after the Kentucky game. Like he's playing more of a ball dominant role. He's got the ball in his hands more often, and I think he's being given license to do more than he was previously. And some of that comes down to Boogie Flans' injury, obviously being out indefinitely, and that's. Boogie Flans, the guy who's going to have the ball in his hands more often than not. He's going to be the guy you want with the ball in his hands when he's available. So I think with John L. Davis, being in that more ball dominant role, it gives him the opportunity to add some more versatility to his game. Like early in the season, he was taking like 60% threes, if I remember correctly, and just wasn't driving inside, which was really his game at Florida Atlantic. Like obviously he was a 3-point threat. He was, career 40% 3-point shooter. But where he was really dangerous was when he put the ball on the floor and drove and really got to the rim, got to the basket and stuff like that. And he's a good passer of the ball as well, so he could kick out and find guys like Elijah Martin and stuff like that. So at Florida Atlantic, obviously. So I think that's kind of the biggest thing, is that he's being trusted more with the ball in his hands. He's being given, I think, more license to do more of the things he did at Florida Atlantic, if that makes sense. And I think you're kind of starting to see the fruits of that. I think, obviously he's playing in more of a not point guard role, but secondary ball handler role to DJ Wagner, and then kind of takes over that primary ball handler when DJ Wagner is getting some rest or something like that. So I think that's kind of the big thing, is that he's got the ball in his hands more often. He's maybe sometimes even being allowed to play through more mistakes, if that makes sense. Like it seemed like earlier in the season, like if he missed a shot, and he was missing shots frequently and badly early in the season, it seemed like sometimes like he wasn't going to be able to play through that. And sometimes if he misses a shot, and it's not like he's missing shots as badly as he was, you know, in non-conference play by any means, but you know, he's still getting that license to do what he does and do what he does best. And I think you're kind of starting to see the fruits of that. And I think, yeah, you know, back-to-back games with 18 points, he wasn't very efficient against Oklahoma by any means, but he was very efficient against Kentucky. So, and some of that does come down to the defense. So I'm intrigued to see how he does against a better defense, which, you know, Texas does have, even if it isn't the best defense in the SEC. So it'll be intriguing to see if you know if he's able to do that, because he's certainly shown better in the last couple of games.
Arkansas and Texas tonight. It'll be an 8 o'clock tip-off on ESPN. Tom Hart, Dane Bradshaw, and Alyssa Lang will be on the call. Alyssa obviously was in Lexington the other day. Maybe she'll bring a little bit of that luck for the Razorbacks down to Austin. First time that Arkansas and Texas have played since the 2018-19 season opener. I mentioned they played in an exhibition game, but the first time they played when it counts, November 9th, 2018, that was that game on a military base down in El Paso that Texas won 73-71. Arkansas's got a lot of great memories playing basketball in Austin. Not all of them against Texas. That's where U.S. Reed hit his half-court shot against Louisville in the NCAA tournament. Of course, Nolan walked off the court there, and they came back and won in overtime. Lots of great memories of Razorback basketball in Austin, and we'll see if the Razorbacks can add another one tonight. Anthony, have a good time. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sir, I'll do my best.
All right.
Yes.
When we come back, Christina Long will join me here in studio. We'll talk Razorback baseball, but first a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart. We are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, and versatile. If you are looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville, or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. Christina Long joins me here in studio now, and she's got the new Hogs Illustrated baseball preview. We talked about this yesterday on our podcast. I don't think they can see you yet.
Oh, okay.
You can hold it up here in just a second. But we talked about this on our podcast yesterday. It just come in whenever Ethan and I had started. But, I mean, this is what you've been, you know, this has been your baby for about the last month. Tell people about it and tell people about what they can expect.
Yeah, I'll show it off now for our YouTube audience. I think it turned out really beautiful. It was funny. I knew it was going to look good when our designer, his name's Brian, he saw our pictures of Vahiva Aloy, who has this really beautiful, very detailed dragon tattoo on his arm. And Brian saw the photos and texted me, "So if I made the tattoo coming off his arm all dragon crazy like, would that be okay?" I said, "I understand your vision, I think, and go for it." So it looks really, really good. You know, Matt worked really hard on, you know, he sat down with all of the coaches, with Dave Van Horn, Nate Thompson, Matt Hobbs, Bobby Wernis, to talk about pretty much everybody who's going to see the field and get their analysis of each guy. And all of those guys, we talked about this a little bit last week, I think, where, you know, they just have such great insight that they shared of their kind of analysis and evaluation of all these players, especially for some of the new faces. You know, it's really, it helps us even just to read back. Like, I'll be referring to this probably all season to see, as we kind of learn more about these guys, see them play, see what was thought of them at the time when they started. So that's something that I'm really proud of. It's something we do in our football preview usually that we've brought to baseball that I think fans will really, really like. And then, yeah, wrote about Vahiva, just about how he's possibly going to be a first-round pick this year and kind of what he needs to do to achieve that. And he's kind of changed his approach at the plate, which is something they're really excited about. They feel really confident in the changes he's made, just, you know, not pressing so hard, not literally swinging for the fences so much. And then you wrote about, you know, the pitching staff having more versatility this year, how there's no Hagen Smith, but it still might be even better actually than last year, just because of the depth that they have. And then about kind of the, like we've been talking about all offseason, about the newer offense, you know, the different approach. So there's a lot of good info in here. You talked to Phil Elson for a Q&A about his decade in the broadcast booth. So that I thought was fun. And Clay Henry talked to Clay Goodwin about his career. Now he's going into, I think, year 17 or 18 as director of baseball ops. So he kind of talked to him about his playing days and being on Dave Van Horn's staff for so long. So there's a lot of stuff in here. It's 48 pages versus our usual 40. And I think it looks really good too. So I'm excited for people to get it.
You know, one of the things, and I've talked to the coaches about this, that I think may get a little, it flies under the radar. There are what I call the front-facing coaches. There's Matt Hobbs, Nate Thompson, Bobby Wernis. But then there's everybody else that's part of that operation, and it's a pretty big operation. And they've all been there for a while, and that can be good. It can be bad. I think for this program, it's probably been pretty good. That's, you know, I mean, you can say what you want to about the postseason the last couple of years, but postseason baseball is weird. Postseason anything is weird when it's not a, you know, like a best of seven type, you know, situation. But you know, DJ Baxendale's been there for a while. Zach Barr has been there for a while. Corey Wood, their trainer, has been there for a long time. You know, even a guy that we work with on a daily basis, Oliver Grigg, the communications director. I think this is year five for him. I mean, that used to be something that you'd run through those guys every other year. And the list goes on and on. The strength coach has been there for a few years now. And like I said, continuity, sometimes it can lead to complacency. I don't think that's the case here. Like, they're all really upset about the way the last 2 years have ended. And they've all gone to work really hard over the last several months trying to get this team, you know, in position to be the best that it can be. But anyway, that's hearing you talk about Clay Goodwin, who's been there, I think, for 16, 17 years now. It just reminded me of all of these others who are kind of behind the scenes and working and doing things who you may not realize that there's been that much familiarity in the building in a while.
I feel like whenever over the course of you talking to these coaches and us, you know, interacting with them this offseason, DJ Baxendale's name has come up several times. I think just with his role kind of in that analytics sort of space, they've mentioned him just kind of unprompted several times in the work that he and that group do, you know, what they do for them.
You don't get to stay in these roles if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is, and I think a lot of them have had opportunities to go elsewhere. I know Nate Thompson has. I know that Matt Hobbs has. Wouldn't be surprised if Bobby Wernis had an opportunity to go somewhere whenever he was a volunteer coach, but he was staying in that volunteer role knowing that at some point in the very near future they were going to allow the teams to get a third paid assistant. Baxendale would be another one. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, his dad was a college baseball coach. This is a family who I think from a baseball perspective is very well known and respected in this area. And so I wouldn't be surprised if DJ had opportunities to go do something else. And the fact that, you know, Hobbs keeps him there, and I think it's and he's been there in that role for a while. And same thing with Van Horn. But the coaches who, you know, are above him, they trust him quite a bit.
Yeah. And to your point about, you know, there's so much continuity and, you know, Dave Van Horn is this legendary figure, but he has adapted and he is continuing to adapt. And that's something that I feel like people talked about with like Nick Saban for such a long time, about one of the best things about him was that he wasn't letting the game pass him by. He wasn't staying stuck in his ways. He was adapting as the game was changing. And I feel like Dave Van Horn has done that. Now he has some things that some beliefs that he holds that are, I don't want to say old school, but, you know, he's against the going away from divisions that they're doing this year and things like that. Mm-hmm. But that's not things that are going to, you know, necessarily hamper your team. His approach to the game, you know, he is adaptable. And you wrote a column in our magazine about how they took that kind of long look in the mirror at the end of last season when it ended earlier than they wanted. And, you know, kind of said, okay, what do we actually need to change? Because something has to change. Something is not working. What are we actually going to do? And I think that's something that not every coach does and not every staff does. I think sometimes you just kind of keep going, especially when you've been at it this long and you have had such success. You know, it can be very easy to say, well, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing and eventually it's going to work. And they've actually made real changes. Now we'll see what happens with them, but I think they feel really confident about what they've been able to do.
If you want to order this magazine, you can call our office, 800-757-6277, 800-757-6277. That is our customer service line here downstairs. Also, if you go to our website at wholehogsports.com, you will see a story right now on the front page of the website. It says 2025 Hogs Illustrated Baseball Preview issue available now. What's inside and how to buy. And inside that story, there's a link that you can click on to go to a page and buy single copy issues of this as well. But yeah, we're proud of this magazine.
It's shop.nwaonline. Shop.nwaonline will get you. There's a little menu you can pick Hogs Illustrated and order a copy if you're not subscribed to the magazine. But yeah, I mean, I'm really proud of it. I know, you know, you spent a lot of time on it. That was why I was filling in on as the podcast host a couple weeks ago, was because Matt really needed to put his head down and work on a lot of this stuff. And there was a lot of information to sort through. You know, they're very good to us over there about, you know, letting us talk to all these coaches, and we're very appreciative of that. But yeah, I mean, I think they feel really good about what they have. And we photographed a lot of the new, you know, it's kind of an introduction to some of these new guys. You know, we've got, you know, new photos of them, and it was fun to meet them ourselves, you know, some of these newcomers. So I'm excited. I'm excited for baseball to get going. I'm glad there's four games to start, because I think I'm going to have to miss maybe the first couple with some track going on too.
We got a lot more baseball talk coming up, but first a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. I want to tell you, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Razorback sports, analysis, latest from recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. You can subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Also want to tell you that you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple and Spotify. We've got a YouTube video version, and we post that each day on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Just search Whole Hog Sports on any of those platforms, and you'll find our podcast. Hope you'll subscribe. It'll help us find other. It'll help other people find us. Even if you subscribe, and maybe leave us a comment too, we'd appreciate that. Speaking of baseball, a couple of notes. I mentioned this yesterday, kind of in passing, because it had just happened. They're number five in the baseball coaches poll, which is the poll of record that we use. You know, there's like five different polls, really even more than that, but five prominent polls that people use for college baseball. We've always gone with the coaches poll. The reason we do that is because, number one, the coaches poll has got a vote in every conference, and it's just got the most it's got the most people that vote in it. And so I've always been a big believer that the more people you have voting, probably the more trustworthy the poll is. To give you an example, Arkansas right now in these polls, they're number five in the coaches. They're number five in D1 baseball. They're number five in the baseball writers. They're number four in Baseball America. They're number 13 in Perfect Game. And I think that's because, and that's an outlier, obviously, but I think it's because they don't have a whole lot of people voting in that poll. So Arkansas, number five in the baseball coaches poll nationally, behind Texas A&M, Tennessee, LSU, and Virginia. And I looked this up yesterday, Christina. They're going to play eight other teams that are ranked in the preseason coaches poll, a total of 22 times. So 22 of 56 games against teams that are ranked in the preseason coaches poll. Other teams that Arkansas is going to play who are ranked, A&M number one, mentioned them, Tennessee number two, LSU number three, Georgia's number nine, Florida's number 10, Texas is number 13, Vanderbilt's number 18, and they're going to play TCU down in Arlington in a couple of weeks, TCU number 23 in this poll.
Is it normal for them to be pretty consistent in these polls? I mean, to have them at five in, what, three of the major ones? Is it pretty – have they usually been pretty –
I think what happened with Perfect Game this year is very odd.
Yeah.
Usually – I mean, usually – like A&M, we'll take them for an example. They are number one in every poll. Mm-hmm. So all it takes is one person – if you've got a poll and you don't have very many people voting in it, all it takes is one person to be down on a team for, you know, their ranking to come down quite a bit.
Yeah, it's interesting how that works. Was it? Did it used to be Baseball America that always had kind of funky poll numbers? There was one poll I remember a few years ago noticing that theirs was always really different.
Probably the old collegiate baseball newspaper.
That's exactly
poll.
What it was. That's exactly what it
was. Yeah, that was run by I forget his name off the top of my head. Lou. It'll come to me.
Lou Gehrig.
No, not Lou Gehrig. I promise.
No, I know.
But the collegiate baseball poll was actually the oldest poll in college baseball. It went back to 1958. The next oldest poll was Baseball America that started in 81. And so, but they went out of business, and it's because he retired. Not anything. You know,
I didn't realize that they were gone.
Yeah, they shut their doors down in the fall of 23.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so, they looked for buyers. I don't think they found one, and they just they shut their doors.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was.
I remember their polls always being so different. Remember?
And I always felt like because he was based in Tucson, he knew West Coast baseball.
That makes sense.
And I always felt like there was maybe a little bit of a lean towards some of those West Coast schools.
That makes sense.
In their preseason, or not even preseason polls, but in
throughout
all of their
the
polls.
Year, they were always different from everybody else's.
Yeah. So Arkansas, number 5 in the baseball coaches poll, and this just came out this morning. The Razorbacks are number 3, let's put this a different way. They are predicted to finish 3rd in the SEC. This is a vote of the SEC baseball coaches. Arkansas picked to finish 3rd this year behind Texas A&M, obviously, and Tennessee. What kind of stood out to me, though, was that A&M got 10 first-place votes. Arkansas got 3, and Tennessee, LSU, and Florida got 1 apiece. And so, again, this goes back to there are some people who are really high on Arkansas, and then for them to get more first-place votes than Tennessee, who's ahead of them, it probably means there are some people who aren't quite so high on Arkansas.
Where do you think the not quite so high is coming from? What do you think is the
probably
concern
the lineup?
Yeah,
probably the lineup. Can they score?
Mm-hmm.
Which we'll see. I think everybody knows their pitching is going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the coaches, they voted Gabe Gackle to their first team, their preseason first team. They voted Landon Beidelsees to their second team. They voted Christian Fouts to their second team. So one thing that, the thing that's missing there is position players.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. And I think that's kind of more the unknown, especially with some of the changes they've made, is the kind of experiment going to work? And are some of these new pieces, going to gel the way they expect them to with kind of the different approach that they're taking?
No Razorback position players on this preseason all-SEC teams. And there's a lot of position players on there,
too. I'm surprised Deloitte's not on there.
A little bit, but, he plays shortstop. You got Justin LeBron at Alabama, who's very good. He was a freshman All-American last year. Dean Curley at Tennessee, he was really good. There were actually another shortstop. And then Colby Shelton has moved to short at Florida. He'd been their third baseman, a really good third baseman for him. So,
it's kind of hard. You got to leave somebody out.
There's some good shortstops in this.
The same thing kind of happened
with
softball.
This doesn't really matter.
Yeah, yeah. What matters is what happens at the end.
What matters is the team at the end of the year.
Yeah. It happened with softball a little bit too, and Ethan's written about it, about some of the players on the softball team that got, were all SEC selections last season, or were all Americans last season, and then were not named preseason All American or preseason All SEC just because of how loaded, and the SEC especially, how loaded that is, and then how many of last season's All-Americans are back this year. So it's happened at softball too. Some people that have gotten left off of where you would expect to see them.
Just run through these SEC preseason rankings here: Texas A&M number 1, Tennessee number 2, Arkansas number 3, LSU is 4, Florida 5, Georgia 6, Vanderbilt 7, Texas 8, Mississippi State 9, Kentucky 10. Oklahoma is 11, Auburn is 12, Alabama 13, South Carolina with their new coach Paul Maneri is number 14, Ole Miss is number 15. Just hard to believe what's happened down there at Ole Miss with their baseball program. And then Missouri, as you would expect, is rounding out the bottom.
Yeah.
Missouri, do they care about baseball?
No.
I don't think they do.
It was so – I think I've talked about this maybe on the show before, about what a bummer it was when I got to – growing up here, and then I got to Missouri and I went to a baseball game and I was all excited, and it was so sad. That was when I realized, not everybody cares about baseball at the college level.
Isn't their stadium capacity like 800 people?
It's really small, and there's never anybody there. I mean, ever. It's crazy.
Yeah, last time Arkansas played there were – way more Razorback fans who were there than than Missouri fans. So.
Yeah, I like their coach, their new coach, who came from Memphis. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Jackson.
But yes, yeah, mm-hmm. I like him a lot. I don't know, you know, I don't think their ceiling is particularly high, just in general, ever. Just with the way, you know, it's just not a priority for the athletic department baseball. So,
and when it's not a priority, and you're competing against,
yes,
14, maybe 15 other schools where it is a priority,
right?
How do you ever expect to, you know, get out of the basement?
Exactly. So, I mean, it's not a good situation there for baseball. There, softball, they do pretty well, I will say.
You know, Arkansas, they, as part of the new league, there's no divisions, and so they've changed up how they schedule. And so Arkansas is going to play Missouri every year, and they're going to play Ole Miss every year. I got a feeling the coaches probably think, you know, that's not the worst deal that you have to play, or you know, that you play Missouri every year, because more often than not, Arkansas is going to win that series, and not everybody gets to play Missouri every year.
Yeah, no, that's true, and there's not a lot of teams like that in the league that you're going to have that you can pretty much.
Well, they're the only one.
Yeah, yeah. There's really nobody else that you can kind of pencil in as a win at any given year.
Okay, so I reported this yesterday. Arkansas, you know, obviously this season has not started yet, but next year they are going to start with four games at Globe Life Field down in Arlington. The fact they're going there, that's not surprising. Dave Van Horn has told me, he said, I'm going to go there every year that I can. Jared Schramm, who is a senior VP for REV Entertainment, they're the arm of the Texas Rangers that's in charge of scheduling at the Globe Life Field. They've said they want Arkansas there every year. He told me back in September here on our podcast, he said that they've got Arkansas committed up almost, I think, until 2030. So, but they're starting the season there next year, and so that's what I think is a little bit interesting, and they're playing four games there. We don't know who they're going to play the first three. We do know, though, that they're going to hang around on that Monday next year and play Tarleton State. That's a fairly new Division I program that's located in Stephenville, about 80 miles from Arlington, the Tarleton State Texans. And so Arkansas is going to play them there on a Monday next season. It'll be the third time that Arkansas has started a season at Globe Life Field. You know, there have been years where they've started there. There have been years like this year where they'll go there the second weekend. But they'll start there next season. So this event, every year that I go down there, it seems like it gets bigger and bigger and bigger from the Arkansas side. When they played TCU there in 23 on a Saturday night, they had an announced attendance of 20,000, but it was about two-thirds Arkansas, and, you know, of course, TCU not very far away in Fort Worth. They had a lot of people who came over and watched the game too. Last year, they played Oklahoma State there, and it's like 95% red and, you know, whatever else, orange for Oklahoma State. And they had like an announced attendance of close to 17,000. So that shows you that there were more Arkansas people who had made the trip there. And the amount, the feedback that I got whenever I put this out yesterday, you know, people saying, thanks for letting me know, I've already put in my PTO for this. I mean, this is a big event for people. It has become, for Razorback baseball, what I think the football team hoped that the A&M series would become at AT&T Stadium, and never, you know, it had a brief uptick, yeah. but then it obviously fizzled off for a while. This just gets more popular and more popular as people go down there. They have a good time for a few days, and they come back and they tell their friends, you got to come down and experience this. And it was very fascinating that the 25 season hasn't even started, and people were so fired up yesterday about the fact they're going to start there in 26.
Yeah, and we don't even know yet who they're going to play there, but it's just with – all the times that they've played there, they've played good competition, you know, teams that you want to see play. So I think that's also a big part of it, is it's an exciting event, really kind of on all levels. And people like to go, you know, Arlington and the Dallas area is fun to go to. It's an easy trip for people here. It's an easy trip for people elsewhere in the state. I'm a little surprised Oklahoma State didn't travel better for that. It's not too far for them either. So
they had trouble filling up their ballpark whenever we were over there a few years ago for the regional.
Which is odd because they're pretty consistent. I don't know. But, I mean, I think I've actually never gotten to go to this. I would like to go someday to the event in Arlington, and it seems like they do a good job.
Ooh, ride down with me and the kids this year if you want to.
Hey, I can entertain them while you drive. I can babysit in the car. No, I mean, I think the fact that Dave Van Horn is so outspoken about enjoying going to this event says a lot, and that they want to keep going. It's good for the event people to have Arkansas in it because of how well they travel. So, yeah, I think, you know, the Tarleton State game, how many games do they have at the park outside of this event? I mean, is it normal for them to have kind of...
You're talking about college games at the Rangers ballpark? Mm-hmm. I think they've got something like 37 scheduled this year. So the way they do it is, you know, they'll play a and I would suspect that Arkansas is going to be part of a six team field next year. And so the way it's been the last couple of years is that there's a six team field to start out the season. So you got nine games that weekend. And then the next 2 weeks you've got a couple of four team fields that come in there. And then what they're really starting to do is they're starting to get teams that have an interest in the Metroplex come in there and play in the midweek. And so you're starting to see a lot more Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday games get scheduled there, Big 12 tournaments there. But I think they've got somewhere in the 37 is the number that comes to my mind, regular season games that are scheduled there this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so quite a bit. And so I think it'll be cool for them to have, you know, an extra game outside of this kind
of... And I think they want to grow it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think it's good for Arkansas. I think, you know, it's probably good for Tarleton State. I don't really know their level of baseball over there. But, no, I mean, I think the multi-team thing is really the star of the show just because of the level of competition they always see there.
I have heard from a good authority that if the weather is good this year, they may open up the roof for the Arkansas games.
Interesting.
Or for any of the college games.
Yeah.
But that's something they haven't done yet. Last year, Texas and LSU played in Houston, and they had like 27,000 people in the ballpark, and they opened the roof that night. And I remember I was watching the game on TV, like, why is everybody in hoodies? Well, it's because they opened the roof, but it was kind of a cooler night in Houston. So so that might be a little wrinkle this year, too. If you go down for Arkansas at the at Globe Life Field, they're going to play Kansas State on February 21st. TCU on February 22nd. Both of those are going to be night games in Arlington. And then they are going to play Michigan on the getaway day at 11 a.m. on February the 23rd at Globe Life Field. Always a really fun time. If you have not gone to that event, I would encourage you to go to it. It is a really cool deal. I've explained it before. It's like a bowl game for college baseball. But instead of one game, it's three games. And so it's a pretty cool deal. All right, we appreciate you being with us here today on our podcast. Hope we'll see you at our website, wholehogsports.com, throughout today. I'm sure we'll have plenty more stories coming up, not just Razorback basketball, obviously, tonight against Texas and Austin. Anthony will be there, but I think we'll have some other stories coming for you today as well on our website. And if we don't see you there, we hope we see you tomorrow on our podcast. Have a great day, everyone.